who's joined. Join us now, everybody, again. Aaron Lamprecht, his website, main website, historyviewed, I think, .com, africaincrisis.org, or info. He's kind of like a resident expert on what is happening down in South Africa. Aside from the South Africans I work with, of course, they give me a little bit of insight. Jan, I got a cute story for you. I was talking to a colored guy. You know what that means.
And yes.
5 years ago, he called me a racist because I didn't think that the takedown of the apartheid government was very good for the people in South Africa. And he now come full circle to say, Fetch, I'm sorry, but my country was 100 times better under white management and control than it is today. And I guess you kind of split that one, wouldn't you?
Well, there you have it, out of the horse's mouth, so to speak, eh?
Yeah, now everybody says people trying to get out of South Africa. It's become such a nightmare for so many people, not just white people, but everybody. The blacks, the communists, and the Jews are making basically that country unlivable.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the things that the liberals and the Jews won't tell you is they will like to boast, for example, about the importance of creating a black middle class, and that when you've created this black middle class, the black middle class will have the same loyalty and devotion to the country, and they'll defend it as firmly as the whites used to do it. But in actual fact, if you actually look at the black middle class, you'll see that they are very much more pathetic than even the whites were at their weakest. I'll give you an example. When Robert Mugabe began seizing the farms in Zimbabwe, when he began seizing the farms, all of a sudden, something like 600,000 black professionals fled from the country to go and live in London. And they all ran out of the country. Instead of standing up to communism, they fled. And in South Africa, the colored people who are basically half black, half white, the colored people have been sending their children out of South Africa for years and years. They go to live in Western countries. In fact, just two doors down from my house, two houses down, is a colored woman. And she is currently living in Ireland. She's got a house here, two houses away from me, but she's living in Ireland and working in Ireland. She prefers Ireland to South Africa.
So I don't doubt that for a second. The Irish are far more of a nicer people to be around than the Mandela communist crowd.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right, let's roll this along real quick. First of all, for those of you who don't know, Jan has been an activist in the political world for quite some time now in South Africa. Give us the book you wrote that was rather prescient. I think it came out in 2001.
Yes, the book is called Government by Deception. You can hunt for it on the internet. And it was my warning to the whites of South Africa that South Africa would end up like Zimbabwe.
Which indeed it has. Now, right now you've got a situation where the black community inside of South Africa, largely through the African National Congress and I guess another political party there, they have literally now come full circle and they are now looking to literally destroy the vestiges of white South Africa. Is that pretty much how you read it?
Yeah, they've done many things. I mean, over the years they instituted job quotas, and job quotas meant that it didn't matter how qualified a white person was, you could only get like 10% of the jobs in any company could be taken up by whites. So even if there are blacks who can't really make the grade, it doesn't matter. The company has to employ them regardless of their qualifications. And So in that way, they've driven out hundreds of thousands of whites out of jobs. And with the economy going downhill, we've also had even more people losing jobs, blacks and whites, but they've gone after everything. They've even gone after statues. They've made something like 130 laws that discriminate against white people. So that they've looked for everything. But nowadays, since the rise of Julius Malema and the economic freedom fighters, which is basically just another communist party, economic freedom is just a nice word hiding the fact that they are all-out communists who want to steal everything openly. And it's them that have pushed for this business of seizing land without compensation, as if there is even a need to do that, but they were the ones that pushed this along, and then the ANC also went with it. But Malema himself was ANC. He was the head of the ANC Youth League, and I've sometimes wondered if the economic freedom fighters, the EFF, whether that in and of itself has been some kind of psy-op so that he can go and do the radical stuff, but he's actually still working to help the ANC. And the scary thing about the situation is that he's got a bunch of blacks who voted for him, and the ANC's also got the majority in parliament, and the ANC and the EFF actually work together. And when it comes to the real hardcore anti-white stuff, then the two of them vote together. And between the two of them, they can actually railroad anything through parliament, anything. And I think that is how this land seizure without compensation got going. And that is the scary part, is that it looks like the ANC can't railroad things through if they want to. But actually, them and the EFF, they do it when they need to. And it's not, that's very bad news.
Now, when we look at South Africa from a political entity on the global stage, in many ways, I think this is the prototype takeover of a country, foreign takeover of a country, basically through political will. Is that kind of how you see it, that really white South Africa was overthrown and they gave up their country?
Well, now you're heading into really interesting territory, Dennis. And I've actually been working in January and February. I actually was working on a lecture that I want to give to whites in South Africa, especially to Afrikaans people. And I'm hoping to get a chance to give this lecture in the USA in April. And it is a summary of our history, the history of the whites of Southern Africa, the last 60 years. What exactly has happened to the whites of Southern Africa? And this includes the Portuguese. We always forget the Portuguese, and that Portugal had two of the five white countries, all of which resisted communism and black majority rule by communists. And when you go through this lecture, there are some very, very interesting conclusions that come out of it, which I don't want to go into detail, but I will say that you are hitting into the right kind of territory here about what worked for us and what didn't work for us. And I will tell you that the politics was a big scam. The politics was a huge disaster. We were much better off when we were busy fighting and struggling and sticking together. But the whole political thing has been an enormous scam. And in the 1980s and 1990s, as the Jews and the liberals gained more power and started pushing the whites away from their natural defensive direction, these Jews and liberals used to get on TV and they'd say, "Oh, you mustn't worry about South Africa in the future. You mustn't worry about land. Everything's going to run by rule of law. The law is going to govern what takes place. The police are still going to be active. Everything's going to be done through the legal system. You won't be able to cheat in parliament or anything like that. I tell you, they lied to the whites about those things. And later, when reality set in, you could see the blacks are busy playing all kinds of games. The liberals, the commies, they're busy breaking the very rules that they tell you were never going to be broken. And all I can say to whites in America and whites in Europe, when the liberals and Jews assure you that your countries are going to be okay, they are lying to you. 20 years later, you'll find out that you were right all along, that the fears that you had were genuine and that there are other things that come into play. The whites have been totally screwed over. Politics was an enormous disaster for the whites.
What it was it was capitulation.
Yes.
This was capitulation. Whites basically gave up the country. They handed it over with very little real fighting. That's what really happened here. This was one of the first assaults on a country and takeover without excessive violence that we've ever seen. But that's what's happened to South Africa.
Now you're talking. You see, even in Rhodesia, where we did fight, in the end, Britain and America came and they said, you've got to hand over to blacks. And one of the things that screwed it up for the whites, where the whites started going wrong originally, even in Rhodesia, is that there was a point in the beginning, the Rhodesians rebelled against Britain. Because Britain told the Rhodesians in the early 1960s, you must hand over the country to the blacks. And we said, no, we don't want to hand over to black communists. These are black communists. They're going to ruin everything. We don't want to do that. So when we fought against these people, what then happened was, as the Soviet Union and the Chinese were ramping up the pressure, what happened was Henry Kissinger, the Jew from America, and America started coming into the game. And Henry Kissinger started working on the leader of South Africa, Forster, at the time. And Henry Kissinger was starting to say, and the whites in Southern Africa began to start holding out hope that maybe if we deal with America, that it would work out better. That if we deal with America, especially because at the time, America was fighting communism in Vietnam. So we all said, well, the Americans are fighting communism there, and our situation is virtually identical. Maybe the Americans will offer us a better hope. But in actual fact, when this Henry Kissinger came, he started with all kinds of stories. He started first with detente. He said, no, you mustn't fight the communists this hard. This is the wrong thing to do. And he started fooling South Africa's leader. Then he put pressure on the South African leader to put pressure on Ian Smith. So then Ian Smith went to negotiate with him. And Henry Kissinger said to Ian Smith of Rhodesia, he said to him, one man, one vote is completely unacceptable. One man, one vote is the only thing that we will accept. You cannot have any other arrangement. And so we now went down the path of this American advice from this Jew from America. And that ended up being the end of Rhodesia. And it basically set the scene for South Africa. However, in South Africa, what gave the South Africans some hope was that P.W. Botha became the state president, and he was much more concerned about defense, and he was much tougher than Forster, who was an idiot. And P.W. Botha in the 1980s prepared South Africa for fighting, and they did do a lot of fighting in Angola, but that's the... And they actually fought the Russians and Cubans there. But where the thing went really wrong was P.W. Botha had everything in place to fight. Everything was sorted out, and we were going to fight harder as the world was going to push us towards black rule. The real thing that threw a curveball was a silent coup d'etat that took place with the Minister of Foreign Affairs, Pip Botha, and F.W. de Klerk. All of a sudden, overnight, there was like a coup inside the Afrikaner political scene. And this F.W. de Klerk came to power suddenly. And I remember when he came to power, the first thing they said to us was, he's a hardcore conservative. They put that message out immediately, which was a total lie. And it was really F.W. de Klerk who proceeded to hand this country over to black rule without any kind of resistance whatsoever.
And then that was just the completion, white South Africa. South Africa really ceased to exist at that point.
Absolutely. And you know what? I will tell you this much. F.W. de Klerk lied to the whites again and again and again. For example, F.W. de Klerk said that this is not a handover of power. He said that. We are not handing over power to the ANC. He used to use the term, he said, this is power sharing. We're going to share power with the ANC. And then another thing he said was that if the ANC employs more violence, then they will stop the negotiations and they won't go forward. And the ANC did use more violence, masses of more violence, and he didn't stop the process. He lied to the whites. There were military people. I knew people in military intelligence.
Jan, we're actually going into a break, so we can't go into a deeper story at that stage. Just Jan Lamprecht, everybody, historyreview.com and africancrisis.org, I believe, or info, one of those. Back with more right after this. For the politically aware, very fast-moving show today, again, the second half of this hour, we have Jan Lamprecht joining us from South Africa. And he's got a couple websites. One of those is africaincrisis.info. I think I said it that time correctly. And historyreview.com. You want to correct me on that, Jan?
The website is...
Yeah, go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Go ahead. You're okay.
The website is africancrisis.info.
African Crisis.
And historyreviewed.com is my main one.
Yes. First of all, you are coming to America in what, end of April?
I'm going to be in America by the 19th of April for an event called the Fash Bash. I'll give you the details. There's going to be a contact. There are going to be contact details there that you can publish. The Fash Bash is going to be it's going to be near Philadelphia between the 19th and the 21st of April. And I will be talking there. And there will be other people as well. There are going to be some interesting people coming from some other countries. So I'm not going to mention who they're going to be, but the Fash Bash, I urge people to support them.
Basically then, Jan, anybody in the Philadelphia area, greater Philadelphia area, would like to come out and see you, meet with you. I guess we'll get ticket information out on Inside the Eye Live at least. We'll probably put that up on Grism to help, if I can get Grism to help with that. And then also your website, historyreview.com and africancrisis.info.
Absolutely. There are going to be some people from other countries that you're going to have a chance to meet.
Some names that
you've heard before.
Yeah, my advice, give me a press release type of thing 2 weeks or so before so I can make sure that I'm reminded to get it out. Just send it by email or like a press release type of thing. A form one, I'll just read it out and I'll get it out for sure a couple of days. So guys, kind of put that on your calendar. End of April in the Philadelphia area, Lamprecht is coming to America. Before we get into some contemporary issues, I want to raise just one small issue from the very past that still applies for today because it's still contemporary. And that was the shooting in New Zealand. I'm sure you're kind of familiar with some of the news. And one of the things that they talked about is this guy started to invoke Nelson Mandela, and yet he's supposed to be this white nationalist, narcissistic terrorist, right? Who, of course, we would never be invoking Nelson Mandela, right? And the thing about Nelson Mandela that I raised a couple of days ago on another show was working hand in hand with Jews. And in 1963, when he was arrested with six Jews. There was a nationalist publication back then that raised, hey, are Jews unhappy with their life here in South Africa? And Jews basically said, the various organizations said, no, we're very happy here and we're very loyal to the country. And so the issue of Jewish treason towards our nations was being raised all the way back in the 1960s when Nelson Mandela was just going around starting to shoot people.
Yes. Now, Mandela, I don't know if you know this, but Mandela worked for a Jewish law firm.
Yes, I am. But Philip, not everybody does. So go ahead.
Right. And he became a hardcore communist. There is a book that has kind of re-exposed the facts of the past. If you're interested, look for a book called Young Mandela. It's got all the hardcore stuff showing what a violent beast he was. And I had Jewish friends who had even met Mandela. And I want to tell you something. Every Jew that I spoke to, Jew or half Jew, who met Nelson Mandela in person, raved about him. You'd think that they'd met God himself. And I often used to ask myself the question, why are these people raving about Nelson Mandela? And the only answer I can come up with is that they liked the fact that this black was the first black to start killing whites. And I mean, he was put on trial because he was going to unleash 7,000 terrorists across South Africa. And even when he was in jail, he was still giving permission for them to carry out bombings. In his own book, he said that he gave the sign-off on the Church Street car bomb, which was the biggest car bomb in the history of South Africa. And two people that I'd worked with died in that car bomb. That car bomb took place. That car bomb exploded about two blocks from where I lived at the time. Mandela is a commie, and he was violent. He was pushing this whole thing. And when he was arrested, he was surrounded by Jewish communists. His defense team was filled with Jews. He was surrounded by Jews, man. And people quietly forget that.
Yeah, and so to see, my point here is that it just shows that Jews do work against their nations. And it's very clear that they work against their nations, and they engineered the handover of this nation to a foreign power, because it's not like Mandela was a local power. He was a foreign power. Now, moving on for the land, just fill us in real quick. What have you got lately on the land grab? Now that whites, it's not their country anymore, blacks can just steal whatever they want because it's not a white country anymore. That's the truth. And so Absolutely. What are they doing now to basically take, really just ethnically cleanse white people from South Africa? What are they doing?
Okay, the big thing that I was concerned about was that Ramaphosa, the president, had said that in March of 2019, they would begin seizing farms without paying for them, without compensation. And that was what I was trying to follow up on this month. Because in the mass media, there was total silence. I eventually managed to get hold of an investment analyst. And this investment analyst told me that the one thing that had occurred was there is an Afrikaans organization. They're sort of a bit liberal. It's called AfriForum. But AfriForum has teamed up with the King of the Zulus. It turns out that the biggest landowner in South Africa is the King of the Zulus. And AfriForum and the King of the Zulus are doing some things against the government. I don't know the exact actions that they are taking. I also contacted some farming organizations, and there are a couple of them in South Africa. And I was basically told that the farming organizations representing the white commercial farmers, mostly, that these farming organizations are fighting this tooth and nail. They are, of course, fighting it through the courts and through every process that they can via government and so forth. They reckoned, the one guy I spoke to said that there is no land that has yet been seized from the whites, but he does think that it could happen by by the end of this year. So they have bought some time for themselves. And what the government has done in the meantime, and it shows you their duplicity in the whole matter, is the government had said that they were going to seize the private land without compensation, even though they've got something like 4,000 farms that they had already taken from whites in years before, and they'd not given those farms to the blacks. So what has actually transpired is it seems as though people have been able to put enough pressure on the politicians for them to rather take land that they already own and start releasing it to blacks. And they are also doing this with land in the cities. I did have a bit of a chuckle myself because some of the land that they're going to release is in an area called Sandton where the very wealthy live. And they're going to release land next to the very wealthy and lots of blacks are going to move in there. So I thought that that's a little bit of good payback for the very wealthy who are among the most treasonous of the whites in the country. But that's...
How many of these whites that are white are really not white, but they're Jewish?
Yes, especially among the wealthy. And you know something? I was reading about... You will never hear about Dr. Hendrik Verwoerd. They call him the architect of apartheid. And do you know that I discovered the other day that Dr. Hendrik Verwoerd wrote an article when he was an editor of a newspaper in 1937. He wrote and he said that the Jews already had total control of the economy and that the whites, the Afrikaans and English-speaking whites, should be allowed to get some of the business licenses that the Jews have. He said the Jews were already dominant in South African business in 1937. And later he was killed, and I'll still tell people the Jewish connection to his murder. But he's the only white man who ever stood up and spoke about the Jews, ever.
Interesting. Another story making the rounds here in America, especially the alternative media. This would be two individuals we know, Karen Smith, also appeared, I think, on a few shows, maybe even Frederick. Frederick's listening. The Khoisan and Cornelius, King Cornelius III. What's the story with this guy? What's going on with that?
Okay. I went and listened to the interview that where he was interviewed by Frederick. And I listened to the things he was saying. I sent it to two people who headed organizations that he'd been dealing with. The one was Isaac van Sail, the head of the Boerer Legion. And the other one was Rodney Bartman, who heads a group called USAF. Now, Isaac van Sail of the Boerer Legion had reached an agreement last year with this Khoi king, that in the event that this king does secede from South Africa and that there should be violence which threatens civilians, either blacks or whites, that the Boerer Legion would step in and would actually protect all civilians, blacks and whites, regardless of who is the source of the violence, whether the ANC or whoever is violent. The Boerer Legion will protect and defend private citizens. So when I told him about the situation with the Khoi King, Isaac van Sail said to me that as far as he's concerned, his agreement and commitment to the Khoi King stands as is. And he says, if the Khoi King ever manages to successfully secede from this country, and there should be violence, that the Boerer Legion will retain its commitment to defending the whites and the blacks in that area. But other than that, he's got nothing further to say. He's just saying that if this king can ever secede, he will honor his agreement to protect civilians. And that was that. Rodney Bartman is a much more important figure because Rodney Bartman spent something like 400,000 rand of his own money. This is close to $30,000 or $40,000 in setting up a banking system and a tax system for this Khoi king. He had a banking system and tax system fully in place. It's still online. It's still on the internet. And he prepared it so that this Khoi king could run his country and could tax people and could function. Now, Rodney Bartman has completely cut off all ties with this Khoi king. He doesn't deal with him anymore at all. And Rodney Bartman sent me an audio, which he said I can publish. As soon as I get it up this weekend, I'll send you a link. And you can hear out of Rodney Bartman's own mouth what he has to say about the Khoi king. He says that this Khoi king is a scam artist. He says that nobody deals with this Khoi king for longer than 3 to 6 months, that within 3 to 6 months, the people realize they've been scammed. He was saying that there's another white woman who's given the Khoi king a staggering 800,000 rand. You're looking at about 70,000 US dollars. These amounts of monies are even more than the Zuidlanders get in South Africa. And that's saying something. These are the monies this Khoi king is getting, and he's got nothing to show for it. And the other thing he was talking about is that the Khoi king and his people are buying expensive BMWs, and they are driving around in expensive cars, and there is also no need for that. The other thing I noticed, just a few things that I noticed in the show that he did with Frederick, some of the statements he made. I just want to point out some issues. He said that he is very close to freedom, and that this year there will be no elections in this State of Good Hope. Now, the State of Good Hope basically covers the Cape. If he says that there are going to be no elections this year, I'm telling you this is an outright lie. How is he going to stop the ANC from holding elections when we have elections on the 8th of May? If he claims that he can stop the elections, I want to see this. I'll be honest with you, I don't believe a word out of his mouth. The elections will take place on the 8th of May, and regardless of what that Khoi king says, and by the way, there's a lot to be said for people who call him this, who call him a king and say that he's a king. You know what? There are lots of people, even among the colored people, who don't even recognize this guy as a king, I must tell you. It is only the alternative media who actually calls him a true king and treats him as if he's royalty. And one thing that also came out in that interview that struck me as interesting is that all of his legal documents are being drawn up by a professor in the USA. And it seems that this professor in the USA is himself a Khoi who left South Africa in 1963. And it's just this one guy who's drawing up these legal documents. The thing the king was boasting about is that he managed to get a case number for his case to be heard in a South African court. Just because he's got a case number for his case to be heard doesn't mean that he's won the case. That case could still be thrown out on its ears when it gets to the court. And I will repeat what I've said before. I have yet to see a court come and change the government. I find it impossible to believe. If you don't have an army, it's not going to happen. Another thing he was saying was about all the generals that he's got with him. When Rodney Bartman was there physically on the day when they raised that flag and they took down the South African flag, Rodney Bartman said to me that only about a dozen people came with the king. So when the king says that he and his generals all pitched up, there wasn't a general in sight from what I can understand from Rodney Bartman. And Rodney Bartman was physically there, and the king even asked Rodney Bartman to go and lock up the parliament buildings. And Rodney Bartman refused to do that because that is the job of the king and his people in carrying out the secession. The fact that he asked whites to go and do his illegal stuff, that is where the whites drew the line. If he's going to secede, he's got to do it himself. And as far as I can see, he's not doing much except talking and buying BMWs, I must tell you.
Okay. Yeah, we want to get more perspective because we know the story's going out and we are much more down to earth on Inside the Eye Live. So we've avoided some stories, and that was one of those we had avoided. Because I deal with like the president of Somaliland. I've dealt with some of these people. I've had some of these non-declared nations, Jan, literally bring their credentials to my office. You know, they're not recognized by the UN, but they will bring their formal credentials. I've dealt with these type of people on numerous occasions, okay? Not one or two. I've been asked by people like the king, perhaps, to go to the CIA and the U.S. Embassy to help. You know, I've been asked to do these types of jobs, believe it or not. So I understand really what's going on. So when I heard this story, I said, yeah, I've seen this even more developed than this one is, and it's going to go nowhere. The best one is Somaliland, though. He's doing pretty good. He's actually got a functioning territory that's not recognized. All right, you have a few things. Obviously, as far as I'm concerned, white South Africa, South Africa as it was created, no longer exists. It exists by name only, but it was literally taken over. It was invaded. It was invaded through subterfuge internally, and it was taken over. So South Africa, as far as I'm concerned, you can name it whatever you want. South Africa doesn't exist as it was created. That's number one. But you say that the problem with the current communist government there, they are so dysfunctional, they're not even able to really hold the country together for all that much longer. What is happening with the dysfunction of this communist government?
Well, the dysfunction has really been hitting us lately, again, with electricity. It's come out of the blue again. We had massive electrical outages in 2008. They went and spent enormous amounts of money building, I think, three power stations, which were built also with the Japanese help. I think Hitachi was involved at least in one of them, if not all of them. And they spent an enormous amount of money on these new power stations. And they said that never again would we see problems occurring with our power. Well, out of the blue, in the last several weeks, we've been hit with power outages like you can't believe. In fact, the only reason I'm talking to you now is because I've got solar power and batteries. Because it's now almost 7 o'clock in the evening. The power in our area has been out since 8 o'clock this morning. And people I've spoken to in other towns, they've also had power outages. This week alone, we've had three power outages, and I live in Johannesburg. And I must tell you, the power outages are hitting us like crazy. And they've got schedules for load shedding. They call it load shedding because they have to cut off power to large areas in order to stop the entire grid collapsing. If they don't do that, the entire grid will go down and the whole country will be without power for several weeks, if not months. Because to start up the grid is a nightmare. Nobody even knows properly how to do it. So
yeah, these things are happening in Venezuela, where they've been down now for probably over a week or two now, and they just don't know what to do. They're bringing in experts, I think, from China is going to fly in and try to get this thing back put together.
It's a major, major mission. So they've got schedules according to which they should be knocking the power out. But I can tell you, in the last 3 weeks, they've already abandoned those schedules. At any time of day or night, the power can just go out without any warning for any length of time. And so the power is the first thing that's hitting everybody. There was an analysis from a military intelligence guy that I published on my website. I regard it as the most accurate prediction I've come across. This guy writes special analyses for high-level customers. And the last time I was privileged enough to get one of his analyses was in 2006. And everything that man predicted then has already occurred. He warned us that government would become dysfunctional. He actually told us that many functions of government would be taken over by private business. That is what he said in 2006. And let me tell you, it's become that way. The police are dysfunctional. The police never catch criminals. I mean, the police almost never catch a criminal. All criminals that are caught either by private security companies owned and run by whites, They might employ lots of blacks, but the companies are owned and run by whites. That is where 99% of all criminals are caught. Sometimes there are even private neighborhood watchers who go and catch criminals. Whites catch the criminals. They take the criminals to the police station. That is how crime is handled in South Africa. Then the police might decide whether to handle or whether to put the black guy in jail or issue a case against him or let him go. There are many criminals that are let go by the police even after they've been caught in the act by whites and by security companies. The big thing that this guy was talking about was that he said that – just pardon me. Just give me a second. He sure. said that – he said that he said that President Ramaphosa is in a state where he talks about the power in the country, about the country becoming slowly more dysfunctional. But then he says there's a point at which you get collapse. And he says when collapse occurs, it comes without any warning whatsoever. He said we are now in the state where we've got a maximum of 3 years before we hit total collapse. Total collapse can happen at any time. And
aren't you advocating, because we're really running out of time here, aren't you advocating at this stage that, look, whites, it's not your country anymore. Let this freaking implode on these idiots. Stop.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I believe that we shouldn't support these people anymore. The whites themselves, this military intelligence guy said that the most functional people in the country are the whites. He said only the whites can save South Africa. And he even said that the whites should consider renegotiating with the blacks. I don't believe the communists will ever allow that. I think that they will under no conditions do anything to work with the whites. I also think the whites should never assist this government. I advocate that the whites should stick to themselves, unite more closely with each other, work together with each other, defend ourselves, look out for criminals. We must unite and stick together at all costs. This and is the that, only thing that works.
With that, Jan, that's a great way to end it because we are out of time. Jan, thanks so much for coming by Inside the Eye Live. Catch Jan in Philadelphia, everybody, of the Fash Bash. We'll get you news on InsideTheEyeLive.com. Check it out. Back next Thursday, Inside the Eye Live Primetime, everybody. Thanks for listening.